decision. Thank you for coming out on a Saturday morning. I know it's a long class, and I'll tell you why. We do continuing education hours as police officers. So every year we have to attend a certain amount of training to keep our license to practice being a peace officer. Doctors do it, attorneys do it also, teachers I know. So this class is typically scheduled from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. And the reason for that is in the lunch break, it gives people a chance to informally discuss and digest and orient themselves, if you will, to what we're talking about. So that's why I picked 10 to 3. I appreciate you guys sacrificing your Saturday for me, and I'm going to try to make it worth your investment. I'm a sergeant with the Columbia Police Department. I have worked for Columbia since 1999. Prior to that, I worked for the Boone County Sheriff's Department from 1991 until 1999, and I've held a peace officer certification since 1988. So I've kind of seen a broad spectrum of law enforcement. I worked the front desk at the Boone County Sheriff's Department answering phones and doing clerical stuff. I worked in the jail. For one portion, I was a transport officer, which means I took people to prison after they were sentenced in court, or I flew all over the United States extraditing them back to Boone County if they had committed an offense and had an arrest warrant. So I've been in every major airport in the United States for 10 minutes or less. So, and then I got to ride on a plane with people, some of whom, believe it or not, were not happy to travel with me, no matter what miles they may have attained. So I've got a pretty broad spectrum of what we do, and I'm also a human being. And I think when we talk about this subject, we have to remember that we're all human beings. I'm just as flawed as the worst criminal that I've encountered. Right? Like I have human failings, I have bad days, good days. Sometimes what I think may not be what is. And I'm a human being. That's probably my biggest credential that I will put forward to this group and when I teach this to police officers. So when I teach this to police officers, I don't mince words. I'm not running for office, nor will I ever, especially after this class. But I want to help be part of the solution. And part of the solution is we have to address the problem. And so to address the problem, we have to define it, look at it, and orient ourselves towards the solution. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to you guys just like you're one of my in-service police classes. Here's what I allow the cops to do. You can raise your hand and ask a question. Right? Like, hey, I don't understand that. Hey, I disagree with that. That's cool. I want to have a little bit of back and forth, but notice I said a little bit. My mission is to get this class taught. And I don't want to stay here till 6 p.m., especially if the sun's going to stay out, right? But on Wednesday? See, you're never a good public speaker unless you get a little bit nervous, right? I'd love to say I'm cool, calm, and collected, but on Wednesday, we're going to have a debrief about today's class. And the reason for that is, this is a lot to take in. Somebody was talking about that with me at the back. So on Wednesday, we'll reconvene, and if you want, and kind of talk about, hey, I agreed with this part. Why don't you do more of this? Why don't you do less of this? Because I want to get community input. So My mission right now is I supervise our community outreach unit, and that is six officers that are dedicated to being part of the city's strategic plan and policing different than most of your patrol cops. So here's what that means. Most of our patrol cops, like right now, there's, I think, eight on for the whole city. We've called in extra people for the parade. Most of our patrol cops have the next call to get to. So if they're helping you change a flat tire, that means somebody's waiting to have their home inspected because they came home and found a burglary. And if they're at that burglary, that means somebody set off their burglar alarm somewhere or a holdup alarm, or there's a fight in progress and they have to get to that. So they never really have time for the give and take that we as human beings and citizens all want and desire. Right? Like they have somewhere else to be. And I'm just being honest with you. Right now at McDonald's on Stadium, I would guess they have no fewer than 20 employees for the breakfast rush or the lunch rush. So another thing I won't do, a ground rule for today, is I'm not going to excuse bad police behavior. I don't make excuses. I might apologize, but I'm not going to try to explain away something that is patently wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it may be unpopular. And that's kind of the rub that we sometimes all hit our heads against. If we get into a discussion, it's time to move on. I'm going to say we're going to move on. I'm going to write it down. And I will get with you one-on-one or on Wednesday, and we'll talk it out. Because I don't want to shut anybody down. It's just, you know, this normal police-citizen interaction is, see if this looks familiar. I'm from the police department. I'm going to say some stuff. And after about 5 minutes, everybody gets to throw questions at me from their own personal viewpoint. And I have to explain to every cop all over the United States, right? I don't want to do that. I want to talk to you guys and have a conversation. So let's get into it. Here's what this training's not. Since 1999, the Columbia Police Department that I know of, and maybe even before then, had diversity training. And diversity training was we would go to a class for an hour or two or four, and they would talk to us about the differences of where we came from and who we were and how that might relate to our job performance. Right? So it was good stuff. A guy named Aaron Thompson, who's a professor from the University of Kentucky, great guy if you ever get a chance to meet him, brilliant speaker, funny. I mean, he's the whole package, right? And I got a lot out of those classes. But what I didn't get was an insight into myself. So today, your mission is to look inside yourself. This class is not about police bias. It's about human bias. And one of the tenets of this class is that all human beings have bias. Implicit, explicit, that's the bad news. The good news is, if you recognize your bias, you can make decisions outside of that influence on your brain. Now, this is based on science. It's not necessarily just my opinion. It's a little bit better than that. This class has scientific studies to back up what we're telling our officers, why we want them to act like that, because we all want cops are going to show up and do what? What would you guys have a Columbia police officer do if you called them? Anything from your burglar alarm going off at 2 in the morning to you got a flat tire or your child's missing. What do you want a Columbia police officer to show up and do? What's that? Help, yeah. Somebody said respect? Yeah. What's that? No three-syllable words are allowed, by the way.
And make them feel safe.
Yeah. Am I writing big enough you guys in the back can see this? Oh, obviously I'm not. Yeah. Ah, there you go. Well, doggone it. How about purple? How did I get 3 green markers? And shame on me for not better preparing. Assess. Don't ask me to spell potato, whatever. But, all right. So I think those are all good qualities. I mean, is anybody, anything else anybody thinks is direly important when our police show up?
Exercise discretion while
enforcing
law.
Oh, yeah. That's too many syllables. We'll come back to that, though. Yeah. We'll come back to that. So discretion. I didn't know it was going to be a spelling bee. All right. I would agree with all those. As a citizen, as someone who lives in Columbia, if I call the police, I want them to show up and do all those things. Now, so what do you think gets in the way of an officer doing that? So part 2 of this, so when a police officer shows up, bias is one thing, That's, you know, I'm taking away the easier answer. But what else could get in the way of an officer doing that?
Fear.
Fear? Okay. So fear might be in contrast with respect. What else?
Fatigue.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Experience? Yeah. I'm going to make one big line here. All those things go through a police officer's mind. And there's a couple different types of learning. There's formal learning, like we're doing here today, hopefully. And there's informal learning, which is, okay, so you did this and this happened. I went to a restaurant the other day. I call it a restaurant, but I was in my car, right? So I go there and I try to order the number 5. And I try to tell them the drink. Like, I've been to this type of place before. I get that, you know, they say, hi, welcome to. And then I say, I would like a number 5 with a water, right? The guy says, well, what kind of soda do you want? I don't want soda. I'm a health nut. That's why I'm eating fast food. No, just kidding. So I said, I want a number 5 with a water. No, you get a soda with that. What kind of soda would you like? Well, I wouldn't like soda. I mean, I would, but I don't want it. So can I just have water? No, we need a soda to add to the ticket. So I just drove away because I didn't know how to win an argument over the microphone there. So I learned something about that restaurant, but it didn't fit with my previous experience with that restaurant. So how does that apply to policing? We, as human beings, as police officers, get out there and do stuff, and we encounter situations, and then later we encounter similar situations, and it's all so tempting, and this is what your brains do as well, is to connect the dots from this event to that event. Oh, thank you. Wow, that's awesome. So what we're going to talk about today is the premise of human bias based on science. An important thing is that all people, even well-intentioned people, have bias. Everybody in this room has a bias. And we're going to assume that everybody in this room, for the police officer, and this is the police training program, wants to be the best, and you want to be impartial. There's lots of different biases. We're going to look at which ones we might encounter. I think the police face bias today. You know, this list of things that we put up here in the green and purple. If a police officer commits some act, if he does or performs his or her duty, the law enforcement feels like someone is automatically going to default to they shouldn't have done that. And I'll give you an example that I share with our cops. One of our officers is 5'4" and weighs 100 pounds, maybe. If she were to encounter a man that's, let's say, 6'2", 250 pounds, is that a fair fight? Anybody here think it would anybody call Vegas and say, my money's on the 100-pounder? I'm betting my whole retirement on the 100-pounder. Would anybody do that? Okay. Okay. So this 6'2" guy, she stops this guy at College and Broadway, and this guy gets out of his car, and she says, you got to go to jail. And this guy punches her and knocks her to the ground. Has anybody here ever been punched? Okay. Has anybody here ever watched mixed martial arts fighting, boxing, the Steven Seagal movies? How many punches is she going to take? Yeah. I mean, again, if you called Vegas and said, my money's on the 100-pounder, they'd be like, how much do you have? We'll give you 1,000 to 1 odds. Because that is the true human experience. You know, police, we do have some defensive tactics training, and I don't want to let this out of the bag, but we're not all secretly Steven Seagal. So if that same officer were to pull her gun and shoot that guy, and he was black, does anybody here know what the headline would read all over the world? Well, and I just encourage you to watch the news anytime. I think the headline would be "White Officer Shoots Unarmed Black Man." Okay? And so one of the rules today is I'm going to speak very frankly with you all. And the reason is we have to get to the root of the problem so that we can be part of the solution, all of us. In this training, we try to recognize our unconscious biases and take conscious actions to fix them. The outcome for our police is that if we can foster this fair and impartial mindset, they will be more apt to solve crimes, they'll be safer, and they'll be more effective in their jobs. And so the payoff to the police is that we're better police when we're fair and impartial. And when we talk about implicit bias and unconscious bias, we'll see how that plays in. We can stay safer, and perhaps the most important thing is the third there, where we're going to enhance and promote trust on the part of the public. When police see the officers as legitimate, people cooperate with us. When they cooperate with us, we can solve crimes. When they don't, we can't. I'll never forget last summer, a guy got shot. I showed up. I put a tourniquet on his leg to try to stop the bleeding. And once the ambulance folks took him to the hospital, I started canvassing the crowd. I started saying, "Did you see what happened?" "Nope." "Did you see what happened?" "Nope." Now, when this guy was shot, it didn't happen. It happened in broad daylight, and it was not an empty street. And after about 10 people telling me no, one of them looks at me and says, "Why don't you do your job and figure it out without asking us?" And so that's what I was trying to do. An eyewitness is a good start. It's not the whole case, but it's certainly better than me showing up 3 minutes, 5 minutes after the event, right? So we need public trust. It's when I give this class to the police, we all get it. There's no benefit to the police to be untrusted. It doesn't make us safer. It doesn't make us more effective. And I'll challenge you in the community. If we foster a community spirit of community and working together to make things better, that actually does make everyone safer, not just the cops, but all of our citizens. If we foster a divisive attitude, I don't get more money. To be blunt, the folks in the black community aren't safer. It's not better. And I don't know who profits from that, but I don't think it's us two groups. And I'm speaking for one group, but I can tell you the police agree with that. Anybody have any thoughts on that? All right. So, scientific research demonstrates that when we are fair and impartial, which goes back to those words that we threw out earlier, right? Help, respect, believe, make me safer, believe my experience. When we do those things, the police are more effective. When we have public trust, we're more legitimate. We can't operate without police legitimacy. When the police are seen as illegitimate, we may as well not go. We can't quash crime. We can't solve crime. We can't prevent crime. So of the big power circle here, we control the smallest piece of the pie. So assisting with crime prevention, when people are seeing us as legitimate and they think, "Oh, good, the police are here," or just, "Oh, the police are here," right, a neutral, we're able to be effective and do our job. There was a homicide on Indiana or Illinois about a year ago. There were 150 people there. The officers arrived within, a few minutes. The crowd was still there. The detectives tell me that they can't get anybody to say anything about what happened. That's a problem for our community. When I say community, I just want you guys, I'm going to let open my heart to you here. As a police officer, I mean, I'm white, honestly, but I protect the community. Good cops have always done this. We don't pick out, oh, we'll protect this part, but not this part. And it was a black child that was killed. Now, I mean, he was 24, 27, I think. But he's somebody's child. He's somebody's brother. He's somebody's son. And he was killed. And it's my job to try to bring justice to whoever killed him for his sake, for his mom's sake, for the community's sake. I mean, we don't just go after people. We should go after people who commit violent crimes, who damage the community. Yes, ma'am. Well, what the question, that's the very reason that we've been asking this since 1999 in our own community. So if I understand your question, it's when people won't cooperate with us, what do we as the police need to do to address that?
Or why?
Well, I think there's several whys there. Some of our biggest critics will say, well, see, if you guys hadn't been no good racist duty heads, then people would talk to you. They take that as evidence, prima facie evidence, that we have in fact been bad policing. But it's not that simple. It's a bigger question than that. Have we messed up? And I'll tell you that as human beings, sometimes we've messed up. And then the other question is, who's influencing that thought process and why? I think that's another question we might need to ask ourselves. You know, who does it help to throw eggs at the police all the time and say, see, they're all racist, no good duty heads? Does that help the rest of our community, including our black community, including the young black males? I don't think so. But I'll get to you. One second. We're doing our part, and that's what I want to communicate to you. So since 1999, like I said in the beginning, we had diversity training. I've been teaching this training. We also train in, it's called the Missouri Racial Profiling Law. And is anybody here from Jeff City? Let's talk about the legislature then. No. So they wrote it calling it the Racial Profiling Law. No, it's supposed to be the anti-racial profiling law. So when some people see that, they're like, see, it's in state law. You guys can racially profile. No, we can't. They just forgot the anti. Probably didn't have enough room on the margin or something. I get it. I forgive them. Yes, sir. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Oh, hold on, Tracy. I told her to pause a second. Go ahead. And I just want to echo what she said, because that's a good point. So her point was, go ahead. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. So, what does it mean to get your own justice? Right. So you're saying it's going to be handled their way outside of a court of law? Like somebody's going to get revenge? Am I? Oh. Well, and... Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's just a lack of confidence in the police. That's a lack of confidence in our whole legal system, right? But, okay, so here's what I position to our cops. If we have anarchy, then if you hit my car in the middle of the night and I find out it was you, I go break your car, right? If you push me down, me and my buddies come push you down. That's anarchy. If we have a civilization, then we have rules. We have an agreement, unspoken, unwritten, unvoted on, that we will work for the greater good and cooperate. And if someone does something egregious or assaults or insults somebody, right, we have a system of laws and prescribed punishments. And it doesn't move fast enough for any of us, okay? In that system, it does fail. There's no doubt in my mind that very few people are happy with the outcome. I was injured by a guy. He resisted arrest. He was bigger than me. At the time, I weighed about 189. He weighed about 279. And he herniated 3 discs in my neck. So every day I wake up with neck pain. I was injured for a long time, and I'll be injured the rest of my life. The prosecutor said, well, he's going to plead guilty to this trespass, so we're not going to charge him with assaulting you. Now, I don't think that's justice, but if I follow what you're saying, then I should wait and get back at him, or I'll handle it outside the rules, and I don't think we want that. I don't think you do either, but... I understand why. I do, too, but I don't think it's right. Uh-huh. Right? Wow. Right. That's a good response time these days. Right? Well, now, and see, that's a little bit off the thing of this class, but I will address it just, okay? So you're frustrated because he left fingerprints, and the officer, or... Then they'd know. Well, and see, this is where we as a society, as a country, okay? It used to be when I started, I would have taken fingerprints off that window if it was me. And sent them to the Missouri Highway Patrol Crime Lab, and they would have run them against the FBI database, right? Which would have probably pleased you to know it. Like, if it was my car, I'd feel a lot better, right? I mean, I understand where you're coming from. The crime lab is so underpaid and understaffed that they have like a year to a year and a half backlog on things like rape, burglary, and homicide, believe it or not. I mean, they are so far behind that they can no longer... I don't know how to read fingerprints or whatever they do, but they don't have time for anything other than really big crimes. And that comes from how much money to that mission. And I know that make you happy, because it wouldn't make me happy either. I am too, right. But there's just so much to pass out, you know, and that's not for a police officer to answer. That's really for an elected official, to be honest with you. And because that's, it does, it frustrates. So then you look at the police thinking, well, they didn't do their job. They don't care. They, what's that?
Yeah, it just reinforces.
Right. But all I'm asking you to look at is, was that a decision on the officer's part or a reality of the system that they're also forced to work under? Because that's a valid complaint. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. But what goes on is this a rape, a homicide, a burglary? Yeah. So every night in the city of Columbia, there's probably between 10 and 100 cars that are rifled through or stuff stolen out of them. And every day, our police officers then have to go back and take that 10 to 100 reports. And if we could do what you're asking, hey, look at these fingerprints, then we can maybe catch the guy or guys or gals responsible and put a stop to that nonsense. And so we're... I don't know. I mean, what do you think would have made you happier if they'd have said, we have no idea? Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Well, and I will just say to you, I feel like a victim of that same flawed system. Because if we could do that, if I could take those fingerprints, send them to Jeff City, let's say it takes 3 months to get to that part of the pile, I don't know, and call you back and say, hey, you know what, it's Larry, this guy up here, we've arrested him. I'd look good to you. You'd be like, wow, those cops really do care. But instead, I'm actually walking right beside you down the path of, okay, this system is not working for us, the community, and the police, and the police are part of the community, and vice versa. I'm with you. I'm with you. So, yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, now, Tracy, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second.
So the last part is that we are all responding to an oppressive system that has priorities that don't fit us. So I say that so that we don't get caught in this binary of how we cops are treated versus how black people are treated. That we are all as a society products of the system, so we can scrap arguing about the wrong things. So quickly, I would say one of the wrong things is that we don't discuss financial priorities.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, Ms. Cleekam. Here's the deal. Here's the thing. This is a class that I teach to police. I'm not a policymaker or a lawmaker. So hold on. Hold on. This class is about how we're addressing this stuff. So, and when we're done, next Wednesday, we're going to have a chance to meet. No, because you're talking about things that are outside this class. And one of the things that I have agreed to do is listen to people. And I've listened to you before. And your points are valid. I don't disagree with anything that she said. But this class today is about what does the science say about a police officer's interaction and how are we going to fix our part, the police, and the invitation at the beginning was to invite you to be part of that. I'm not going to start clear back in 99. No. No, that's why I told her I feel the same way as far as that the allocation of funds for fingerprints. I mean, that's a situation beyond my control or hers that causes her frustration and a viewpoint of the police. And it's beyond my control, which causes me frustration and an inability to serve, which then might make the next time you deal with the cops, just like I was talking about at the fast food restaurant, you might be like, see, here's just another example. So your point's well taken, but let me keep moving real quick.
Yeah. Situation, and the situations are, I've had most contact with police myself, is two different times cars have bashed through my fence and ended up like on my property or on the park property.
Mm-hmm.
What can and can't happen, what will and won't happen with the resources after this? Like, here's just a quick statement from the officer. Here's what follow-up is going to happen. Here's what follow-up isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot happen because of funds or whatever. I guess just transparency there is what I would want. Just because, you know, it's their world. The officers live in the world of, mm-hmm. you know,
Well, and that's the fine art of policing.
I don't feel like somebody's just kind of deliberately, you know, poo-pooing but so that I realistically know what follow-up I can and what follow-up I cannot expect. And I think for the most part in the fence incident, I've had it, but I think in general, sort of, and it is frustrating that it's kind of like you call the police and not just your neighbor who happens to have a gun or whatever, because you hope that the police have access to a bigger picture of information, have a better investigative capacity, a better ability to stop it altogether. But if the whole system's messed up, then
Okay. Well, let me move on here. Let me move on just a little bit because I want to get to something else. So if people don't see us as legitimate, they won't call us, they won't provide us information, they won't serve as a witness, they won't believe a cop who's testifying, and they won't support the police in times of crisis. What I ask our police officers is, are we responding to the public in such a way that we have earned that? Now, I think what Tracy was saying, and I do agree with her point, is you have not only what I've done as a police officer, but it's what's been done clear back to the inception. And that's why I say I get where she's coming from there, and I don't want you guys to miss that either. This, we're facing not just what Mike Hester does, but what every officer before you has done, and what historically the police did and were told to do. To get back to talking about civilization and rules. If you're going to have a civilization, you're going to have rules. And if you have rules, someone has to enforce them. And if you've ever been a manager of people or an owner of a business or a supervisor, at some point you got to tell somebody, you know, hey, you can't show up 10 minutes late for work every day. And when you do that, you're never popular, right? Because what does that guy go? He goes to get his cup of coffee on the way to his desk or his factory spot, and he says, Hester jumped my butt today. When really, I always said, you're violating a known rule, right? And it's even worse in policing because we make lifelong decisions, and let's talk about that. So, profiling. Who here believes that the Columbia police officers profile black people? Okay. Who here has been a victim of profiling? Okay. Who here thinks that that practice is encouraged or part of being a cop in Columbia?
Oh, maybe I could say was, maybe not today.
Okay. I hope not. Well, hey, did everybody get a little scenario packet when you walked in? Okay. If you'll turn in yours, can I see yours for a second, ma'am? Just one second. If you'll turn to scenario number four, I think. No, number three, I apologize. Number three. There you go. Thank you. Thanks, Bob. All right, so scenario number three. I'd like you guys to work on this kind of as groups. I know we've all got our spots, but if there's people sitting around you, if you'll turn to your neighbor or behind you a little bit and work on this. Let's take about 5 minutes, and then we'll go to question one. Does everybody have a packet? And you know what? I'll just go ahead and read the scenario to you for the folks that are watching this on the City Channel. Your partner is in the lead on this day and decides to ticket stop sign violators at a particular intersection. During the course of 4 hours at this location, you determine that he is pulling over and ticketing all of the Hispanic drivers that run the stop sign, but is not pulling over the Caucasian drivers who do so, even though the nature of the violations are not different across the groups. So the discussion for your group, if you want to jot some notes on your paper, is this racially based policing? Can a person be a subject of biased policing even if he or she did not commit or did commit a crime of traffic violation? List three different ways you might respond to this observation. All right, so for this scenario, you are the partner in the car, right? You're riding with another officer, and he or she is stopping Hispanics and giving them tickets at a stop sign, but not stopping the white folks. All right, I'll see you in 5 minutes. And so tell me more what you think racially biased enforcement would look like.
Racially biased enforcement, you're only going to look for black people, Hispanic, Native American, and certain names here who are doing this activity. That's it. Blinders on, I'm not looking at anybody else.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Okay. I will tell you as a sergeant and someone who loves my profession and a protector of my profession, I wouldn't even split that hair. I would just say it's wrong. And I'm just being honest with you. Like, I don't care if they're enforcing it or policing it way. This hurts. This scenario right here makes everybody aggravated. It just doesn't help. And so we would throw this bum out on his ear. Right? And I would hope I'd get a high five from most people. Hang on one second, Carol. Let me come back.
Well, let's add some more nuances to this scenario. Let's say this intersection is in a neighborhood
mm-hmm.
where it has several burglaries.
Okay.
And criminals are Hispanic. You know, we're already underfunded in the mind of a police officer. Another affluent neighborhood is all white. You know, they just passed it. So wouldn't
Okay, and so again, I just want to restate his question, make sure everybody heard it. So if they've had burglaries in this neighborhood and the suspects from the burglaries are Hispanic, would it be a wise or good policing practice to try to stop the Hispanics because the suspect in the burglaries are Hispanics? Some people say no. Now, remember, now picture yourself living in this neighborhood. And so that's a great, I'm glad you brought that up. So if you live in this neighborhood and three of your neighbors have come home from work or school and their house has been burglarized, and you call the police and you say, I want something done, and some cop says, we have an idea who it is, right? Who would the police stop to try to quell the burglaries? He's talking big picture policing, right? Instead of just a stop sign, could the police be trying to solve something bigger? Right? Okay, so here's my answer to that. This is a situation right here that could and has occurred. And think about the TSA lines at the airport. Remember after 9/11, we all had to go through the x-ray body scanner thing. We still do, I guess. Haven't flown for a while. But I remember, and this is right after 9/11. This is like October 15th. So I'm standing in the line, and at the time I had hair. But I have a military haircut, I had a black backpack, and I had sunglasses on because it had been really bright outside, and I had a migraine. So I'm just standing there just staring straight ahead. And this TSA guy line walks up through the line looking at everybody. And I'm thinking, if I were that guy, I'd pull me out and say, you know what I'm saying? I'm just being honest. But instead he goes up to a woman who's about 80, in a wheelchair with oxygen. Says, ma'am, we need you to step out. And I'm like, and I even looked at this other guy who was by me, and he's looking at me with the same wow, you know. So that'd be the other end of the spectrum. Here's what I'll say, and here's what I tell our cops, and here's how I've trained people. The Constitution has the Fourth Amendment, right, which protects citizens to be free in their persons, papers, things, effects, and houses from unreasonable searches, except if there's an affidavit of probable cause sworn before a judge, right? So that's very important. Some people today want to say the Constitution's outdated. That is such a great rule for a free society. I just want to get that in. Constitution. Woot, woot. But it's unreasonable searches that are prohibited, not every search. So if I'm trying to protect a neighborhood where three houses have been burglarized and the suspects are supposed to be Hispanic, an officer could leap to the next step and we could all say, wow, that's good policing. Or it could be like the TSA line I was describing. If you don't have a lawful reason to stop somebody, you shouldn't. That's the Fourth Amendment. if you do have a lawful reason and you start doing racial policing or enforcement, it's awful. So as a police officer, I would instruct my cops, you know, are these supposed to be Hispanic guys between the ages of 15 and 20, 20 to 25, 30 to 50? I mean, what are we looking, what exactly are we talking about? And if we don't know those, I think it's not worth the damage to police legitimacy to stop everybody. And that sounds great. Like some people are like, oh, yeah, that's good, unless you live in that neighborhood. And that's where some of that negative stuff comes back. Hold on one second. John, I think you had your hand up first.
First of all, so that's very far from the scenario.
Okay.
4 hours.
Right. No, that's right, right. He asked a question.
I know. Okay. I know he asked the question.
Yeah.
But you actually just use the word, the rationale in some sense was to quell the ranks of burglaries.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it is so broad, and in fact, you don't know what the people in that neighborhood would have thought about those kind of tactics and those kind of policies, because in fact,
oh, I do.
You're guessing what they are.
No.
You may have talked to some people.
Right.
As far as the neighborhood as a whole and so forth, you don't know, because in fact, if you're relying on your individual experience, I don't think that you should rely on that. Now, if you had lots of conversations with a variety of people and concluded in these scenarios, we think that this would quell, and we think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But you haven't done that.
So
I know you think you've done it. But
sure.
You
So what he's saying is that I've overstepped my bounds as a police officer and assumed that other people in the neighborhood want us to take all steps, including selective enforcement, to quell these burglaries. Am I restating that?
Real good discussion with a wide range of people.
Yeah.
Then I might believe that, but the fact is I don't think you've had that kind of wide.
Well, I disagree with you. I've had discussions since I started this. So hold on. No, I don't know.
It's about the department and its policy.
Well, and so what we don't want to do, and I hear what you're saying there. I hear what you're saying. We don't want to suspend the Constitution to try to get a quick fix.
It's much more than that.
Oh, that's true.
Because you're making that judgment, in fact, leaves lots of people unsatisfied with the legitimacy of what you're saying. And going through these things without having had those much broader, larger discussions and so forth means that you're basically telling me we should trust you because Mike has been through this and he knows, and he sounds like he's a fair guy. Actually, that has not led to increased trust in police.
Okay.
I think it will.
Yeah.
And just telling us we should, or some of the benefits of it, doesn't get us closer.
Well, now. Okay, your point's taken, and what I'm trying to do is walk people through that, because, you know, where you stand on an issue depends on where you sit, and I know that you have done hundreds or thousands of talking with different community groups over a long period of time, so I understand where you come from.
Yeah, we don't have to have a one-on-one.
Right, but your point is that do we want the police officer to specifically, individually decide how to do things? And I'll say, although I agree with most of what John's saying, I'll also say, what does a good police officer do? And so when I teach this class, I challenge our officers. If that's your area, if your assigned area is, let's say, Broadway between Garth and, I don't know, West Boulevard, and there's been burglaries in that area. Given the facts of this scenario, and he's right, we went way away from the scenario, is that effective policing? I will say that you must stay within the constitutional confines, because that's the rule that prevents the individual from having good intentions And one of the premises of this class is even well-intentioned people have bias. And when well-intentioned people have bias and they want to stop this rash of burglaries, well, then you read that in 4 hours we gave all Hispanics tickets and no white people. And the officer may have had the best of intention. The community sits there and goes, I feel like I've just been kicked in the teeth, right? So I yes, ma'am. Oh, gosh. Not qualified to answer that. Right. Yeah, I don't either. I'm just saying it shocked me of all the people in line with me that they picked on someone.
She wasn't there, was she?
No. No, I mean, even if she had been, I mean, I, you know, and that goes, it's a huge problem. Yes, ma'am.
Getting back to the scenario.
Yes, ma'am.
A stop sign is a law which is supposed to stop. Anybody that goes through the stop sign is breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if they're pink, yellow, green, whatever color they are, they're breaking the law. And so it doesn't matter if they're Hispanic or white or whatever.
Well, and so what she said, and again, just for she said the stop sign is a law, and it shouldn't matter at all what color people are. And but your partner in this scenario, just to get back to the scenario, is your partner only ticketed Hispanics and not white folks, and that's troubling to me as a supervisor, as a police officer, and as a citizen. Because what if they decide to stop white guys who actually completely resemble Brad Pitt? I'll be profiled. But we don't want that. No matter what you look like, okay? I'd be safe, let's be honest. They'd be like, go on through. I'll be like, no, I heard, you know. And they'd be like, just go on through. Yeah, I mean Brad Pitt with a bald spot. Anyhow, go ahead.
Now, one way though, I mean, returning to the question, there are different ways you might approach it, you know, realistically with your partner, you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to have each other's back, and so you all to confront them, all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the training gives your officers tools to say something along the lines of, I notice you're letting a lot of white guys get away. Like, you know, the white guys are hard to catch because they don't fly under the radar because, you know, somebody, you describe somebody and they say it's a white guy, well, that doesn't eliminate very much. So, I mean, don't we need to be stopping some people with the stop sign so that we can run records because you don't have this easy identification thing like you have with these other people. You know,
right. Right, and I think that's what she was saying, and I think that's what I would encourage my officers to do is be a good police officer. Now, good is a very subjective term, right? Like if I caught a guy who did all these burglaries, some people might say, oh, that's good police work, but not if I did it this way, is what I'm saying. So your point is well taken. In answer to your question, does this training prepare our officers to have these talks? Absolutely. When I do these trainings, now here's the deal, you know, we have firearms training, defensive tactics training, forensic evidence kind of stuff. That's all cool stuff, right? You see that on TV. You turn on TV, when little kids watch TV and when young people and old people watch TV, they don't tune into a show called Fair and Impartial Policing. Tonight, we delve into good police work on a car stop, right? There's, you know, this discussion fascinates me, and I know some of us in the room, but no, it would get bad ratings. Unless it was a Simpsons episode. Our culture is prepared, to get back to your statement, we don't want bad cops. Like, it doesn't do us any good. It's like if you run a corporation. I did some training in a local corporation, and on their walls they had the tenets of what they stand for and how they're going to get to their mission and be the best. It's awesome. Like, I just sat in there and read the motivational posters. They're like, hey, it's time for you to teach. I'm like, yeah, okay. Because I was in there just, it was good stuff. If we treat people a certain way, if we work on our work product, if I go out and be a constitutionally based police officer who believes in humanity, who recognizes that I look different than some people in some of the communities I serve, but that's where the difference stops. I wouldn't want my brother pulled over because he looks like me for no reason, or to even come tell me that story, even if I could say, well, but you did run the stop sign. It gets muddy. Policing is an art. We're talking about the science of bias, but to do it right, it's kind of an art. So we've kind of talked about this a little bit. The reputation of the police department can be harmed. The individual that we contact can be harmed. Even though that cop in this scenario we just looked at, and we added in that extra, right, of maybe he's trying to quell burglaries, even if that's his intent, the harm he does might outrun the good, and probably does. And that's why I appreciate the input there. So here's one for you. Now, we've talked about the police a little bit. I want you guys to recognize your own biases. Look inside yourself. You don't have to raise your hand at any point and say, gosh, Sergeant Hester, you made me have an epiphany. I never knew I had a bias. But I'm inviting you to be part of the community solution, and that means looking inside our own selves. Do I have a bias? Do you have a bias? Science tells me that everyone in this room has a bias. Understand how your implicit biases can affect your perceptions and then your decisions. You know, there's that bumper sticker that says perception's reality. If you perceive the police as self-righteous, aggressive, dangerous, bullies, if you perceive us that way, you're going to make decisions and act consistent with your beliefs. If you see us as human beings who have a difficult job, who sometimes mess up, guilty as charged, just like I do, you might perceive us differently. What we talk about, what we really hammer at police training is how does biased policing impact community members and our departments? Kind of what this scenario is about. That's why I wanted to go to that. How we in just that few minutes, we can all kind of see both sides, and I just want to encourage you guys. I tell people, if you got a buddy that's doing something wrong, if it's not illegal, unethical, or immoral, talk to him. Confront him. If it is illegal, unethical, or immoral, report him to our internal affairs, and that's consistent with our policy and our practice. Often, I mean, I can't give you a number. Does it happen every day? No. Does it happen every week? No. Does it happen every month? No. But the other thing is, no matter where you work, somebody's doing something that you may or may not agree with. If I tell you, I'm not looking for perfect people to be police. And if you are, look inside your own self and your own behavior. Because we are trusted with a high level of responsibility, but we're human beings. If we recognize a bias, the good news about bias is, if you recognize it, you can take steps to fix it. You can take steps to, fix is not the right word, to mitigate it. As Lori put up here, skills and tactics to reduce the influence on her practice. So, whew, I had a lot of coffee this morning. I would like to take about a 10-minute break, and then I'd like to come back, and we're going to watch a video, and then we're going to discuss that, and then we're going to eat lunch. And I really appreciate everybody's give and take here. So let's have a 10-minute break. Let's please come back at 11:27. Okay, 11:28. Whew. Coffee.
Then he's gone, and then... headquarters is comprised of law and order. And I think, you know, you're a part of getting to that better.
Thank you. Hang on one second. Yes.
What does FIP stand for?
Sorry. Fair and Impartial Policing.
Okay, thank you.
I, you know what? Thank you for bringing that up, because I need to talk about that. Fair and Impartial Policing is, let's give Ed a round, no, don't, that's scary, is the goal of this whole study of human bias. We want, I won't speak for y'all, but I want our cops to go out there and stop crime and make the community safe and hold responsible those people who choose to break the law and do it in such a manner that we're part of the community and a welcome part of the community. And that's a tall order to fill. It's never popular to be the guy or gal who gives a ticket, right? And there's a way to do that where people, I mean, I've given lots of traffic tickets in my life where people have shaken my hand and said, hey, thank you. I've arrested people. I've used force on people where I pepper sprayed them or threw them down or we had a fight. And before they go off to jail, I always say the same thing. I wish you well. I hope you can turn your life around. I can't tell you how many people have shook my hand. And that's the biggest job evaluation for a police officer. Some people haven't. But those guys that you look in the eye, man to man, person to person, human to human, and they say, you treated me decent. I mean, I think that's the goal for our police officers. That's something I believe, personally. So, bias rears its ugly head in all human behavior. And I want to show you a quick video, and then we'll discuss it. But as we're watching this video, I want you to think about what makes a good singer in the United States of America, right? So, without further ado, and if this is too loud, let me know, okay? Is it too loud?
Hi, what's your name, darling?
My name is Susan Boyle.
Okay, Susan, where are you from?
I am from Blackburn near Bathgate, West Lothian.
It's a big town.
It's a sort of collection of... It's a collection of, villages. I had to think there.
And how old are you, Susan?
I am 47. And that's just one side of me.
Okay, what's the dream?
I'm trying to be a professional singer.
And why hasn't it worked out so far, Susan?
I've never been given the chance before, but here's hoping it'll change.
Okay, and who would you like to be as successful as?
Elaine Page.
Elaine Page.
What are you going to sing tonight?
I'm going to sing I Dreamed a Dream from the Miserables.
Okay.
Big song.
Yeah? Yes.
Thank you.
it.
That's it.
All right. Thank you very much, Susan Pierce.
Without a doubt, that was the biggest surprise I have had in 3 years on this show. When you stood there with that cheeky grin and said, I want to be like Elaine Page, everyone was laughing at you. No one is laughing now. That was stunning, an incredible performance. Amazing. I'm reeling from shock about you two, but...
I am so thrilled because I know that everybody was against you. I honestly think that we were all being very cynical, and I think that's the biggest wake-up call ever. And I just want to say that it was a complete privilege listening to that. It was brilliant.
I knew the minute you walked out... on that stage, that we were going to hear something extraordinary, and I was right.
Quite a lot of touch.
Susan, you are a little tiger, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know about that.
You are? I don't know about that. OK, moment of truth. Here's yes or no.
The biggest yes I have ever given anybody.
Amanda?
Yes, definitely.
Susan Boyle, you can go back to the village with your head held high. It's three S's.
Thank you. Run away from me there. So, this video to our police officers because it clearly demonstrates bias, right? In the United States of America, what do our successful, famous singers look like? They're beautiful, somebody said. She said it wasn't like that before we had cameras everywhere, right? Did you say bony?
Baloney.
Oh, baloney. Yeah. Nah, I don't know what that means.
A star is white, blonde, skinny.
Yeah.
That's why when she got up there, they were like, oh, yeah. Any of those stereotypes of what we think success looks like.
That's right. So Tracy said she doesn't fit the blonde, skinny, white, young stereotype. And if you remember the girl in the audience who's like covering her mouth like, oh, my God, this is going to go horrible. So we got to watch bias. I mean, not all have bias. But I'm just saying that the reason we share this video is it shows the bias that we have based on what we think we're going to see or hear. And that lady has a beautiful voice. I mean, you know, it's inarguable. You know, and then you got Simon saying, you know, I knew as soon as you walked out. I mean, I love that line. And I think Simon fell in love at one point. Remember when he's got his hands on his desk, he's like, you know. But the reason we share this video is that's what human bias looks like. We have this idea in our mind. We have a stereotype of what a successful singer should look like. What fits into being this type of person? And then our bias kicks in and we make a decision. And then we find out we were wrong. And so this is a teaching tool for our cops, and I hope for you guys, that... we all have bias, and we good people have bias. Even those of us who are well-intentioned have a bias. Come back to me here. So we all kind of got Susan boiled on this. All right, I'm back. Anybody have her CDs or whatever? She's now got a recording contract, and she should. You know, it's one of those feel-good stories. Bias is a normal attribute. Even in well-intentioned people are going to have a bias. There's these things called political ads on TV. Or if you watch the talk shows, you may have recognized bias in some reporter, one side versus the other. I don't care about your politics. It's, at this point, I think we've reached ridiculous level on all the TV stations. Biases are often unconscious or implicit. We don't even know we're doing this. Our brain has an operating system, and unconsciously, even if we're good people, we're acting somewhat on a bias. Now, implicit bias can even be in people who say, well, I'm not, you know what, I'm colorblind, I don't have biases. That's that group's problem or my problem or somebody else's problem. Everybody has a bias. We saw how the bias here can affect our perceptions. I mean, the first time I saw the Susan Boyle video, I thought it was going to be a train wreck, right? I thought, they're setting this poor lady up there to throw eggs at her, right? Like, here's this poor woman that just wants a chance to be famous, and these sadistic people who watch this show just want to see her fail so they can feel better about themselves. And then, I mean, she blew me away. Blew me away. Yes, sir?
The thing I liked about it,
they gave her a chance. That's
right. And the chance turned out good, and they could have still cheated.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Looking at me like, well, he's as smart as me, and might be smarter, so I'm going to hold him up. That bias, too.
Yes. So, to get back, who do we most likely prejudge?
People opposite ourselves.
He said people opposite of ourselves. People who don't look like us. I can't remember somebody in the room probably know it, but there's a we group and a they group. People that look like we do, who act like we do, people who like what we do, we see one way. If you watch the NFL, like on Sunday, all the Chiefs fans show up because they don't know how the season's going to end yet, but I do. But they all show up and they're all fired up and they're like, yeah, Kansas City Chiefs! And they all got hats on, and you can clearly see at an NFL game who the we is and who the they is, right? And then the Broncos fans show up because they have a better team. But it's a we-they thing, and that's so clear to see. What's not clear is within racism, within the human interaction of us, all of us, we like people who think like we do. All of us are that way. You feel more comfortable with people who are part of our we group, that are not part of an out group, if you will. And so when I talk to people in this room, if I talk to a police officer who's been a cop more than 20 years, they're closer to a we for me than a new guy who's been here a year. And that's within my own profession. And we all kind of do that. So what determines the characteristics that we assign to other people? Their actions? Sir? If they're police, if they're wearing a uniform. When I see a Broncos fan, I see somebody who can clearly aggregate statistics and know who's going to win. One more sec, Trace.
If I see them as an out group, not my group, then I am more likely to assign them kind of characteristics based on the group that I think they belong to.
Yeah.
Like, and if I have personal interaction with members of that group, I'll sort of, you know, I'll value that. And if I don't have, or if I do have, you have to add to the personal experience the vicarious experience or the fake experience or whatever of media portrayals, movies, television.
Oh, yeah.
Real experience and what I call
Wow. Well, and now that we're getting into virtual reality, which is the next step, you ain't seen nothing yet, right? Like, because people that watch virtual reality will have a psychological memory as if they were there. So it's great if you, like, watch a virtual reality about Hawaii. That'd be awesome. I've always wanted to go there. But what if it's a negative, horrible experience? Then you're going to be like, oh, I feel the same. And you're literally going to feel, it's not even empathy at this point. It's like a shared experience. And that could be used for great good. The cynic in me worries a little bit about what you're saying. So, and I want to touch on a point she said, and I see your hands. Hold on one sec. If this is something that I challenge some of my critics with when they talk about the bias in police, sometimes these people called movie stars with no experience in community meetings or interactions, really, I mean, they're good actors, they go to Hollywood, and then they, because they're gazillionaires, they can give their viewpoint about anything and everything, and we'll all listen. You know, like, what does Brad Pitt say about a rocket to Mars? Well, Brad Pitt didn't study rockets to Mars. But because he's a movie star, he gets to stand there and tell you, right? He may know nothing. He might say they should all be coal-fired, and that's how we'll get to Mars. Right? You just light a fuse. But what troubles me is, what are they feeding us about young black males in America? In a TV show or a movie, what can a black male grow up and be? Somebody said sports? Criminal? Think about the movies and television shows you watch. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say. Right? But what do movies teach us that a young black male can become? Sports? Right. I think you're right. I think she's right. So what he said was that TV teaches us you can become a sports star or a rapper. It dictates to, is what he said. And then she said that there's been more inclusion of black actors and black TV stars and movie stars. When I watch movies, and think about your whole life history or the whole movie history, and you're right, I think they have become more inclusive, and they should. They should have the whole time. But what they have made a profit on and fed themselves on for years is portraying young black men as rappers, professional sports stars, or criminals. Sometimes they make the black guy the good cop, right? I've seen a few of those. But I'm talking for most of the pie chart, our young children, white, black, whatever, are being fed this diet of here's what you'll become. Think about all the movies you've ever watched. And now that's not a policing problem, but it causes one, because what do they say about the cops? You know, I remember cop shows where the cops shoot somebody, and then the next scene is they're laughing like, man, I'm glad we made it out of that. I know officers who have shot somebody. They're not laughing 5 minutes later, unless it's an absolute stress reaction. And if you've ever survived a violent encounter or a car crash, sometimes I show up at a car crash where some car's on its roof, and one of the guys is like, whew, man, I'm glad I got through that. It's a human reaction. It's not necessarily a heart reaction, if you follow that. But I'll tell you what doesn't happen is we don't go out here and shoot somebody and then go back to the cop shop and hang out and be like, tomorrow let's go out and play volleyball. Your life is ruined if you shoot somebody. Financially, emotionally, professionally. There's no profit in me, no profit in it for any police officer to go out here and shoot somebody. I had the honor of being visited by some social workers to one of our shift meetings a few weeks ago, and one of the guys said, because he was nervous, and I said, man, you did a great job. Thank you for sharing your program with what you're trying to do. I said, are you all right? You seem nervous. He's like, man, I mean, there's all these cops in this room with guns. And I said, well, okay. I said, how many people you think we've shot? He's like, between all of you guys? I said, yeah, how many people in this room have shot somebody? You remember this? He's like, I don't know, 50, 60, 70? Because what does TV say about the police? We're out there just shooting. So we went around the room, and the answer is between six cops or seven, and I've been there the longest, the answer is zero. Zero. Now, I could have shot some people justifiably, but I chose not to by using good tactics, good police work. Some people think I should have shot some of the people that I've encountered. And in retrospect, maybe I should have. It worked out. And it's not because I'm the best. Some of them, I got flat lucky. I remember there was three brothers, okay? So these three brothers were responsible for a lot of crimes. Two of them were meth heads, just into everything. Burglars, you name it, they did it. One of them was a little bit slower, and he was kind of nice, but his two big brothers drug him into bad stuff, I'll be honest with you. So I see these three, and they all three have warrants, and I think, I need to stop them. And I knew my backup was like 100 yards behind me at a stoplight. So I pull my car over, because I recognize three dangerous wanted criminals. I get out and say, everybody put your hands in the car. And now I'm thinking, well, my backup is surely, you know, 50 yards behind me. And so like a dummy, I decide I'm going to go ahead and engage them without backup there. And so I picked the brother that I perceived as slower and less dangerous. Do you see the bias working there? The other two I knew were dangerous. So as I start, and I tell him, stand up, put your hands behind your head, spread your feet, I'm going to frisk you for weapons. Do you have any weapons on you? He says, no. And so as I start to frisk him, and he's a great big, like one of them great big guys, which I'm not. But he's like, oh, I got a pocket knife. So he pulls out this pocket knife and hands it to me. And my perception was that he wasn't attacking me. He was trying to be helpful. So I'm keeping an eye on the two dangerous brothers. And so I take the knife from him, and I just slide it into my back pocket because I got to put it somewhere, right? And so I start to frisk him again, and oh, I forgot about this one. So I'm like, right here, right? He could have stabbed me. He had seven knives on him. And because God likes me a little bit, he didn't stab me, right? Because he had seven chances. Because my dumb self thought, this is the less violent one. So biased policing is unsafe. My bias overrode my tactics. The proper tactics would have been for me to say, you three stand still. When my backup rolled up, have everybody put their hands in the car maybe, and with a partner, address it safely one at a time. It is by his decision that I'm still alive, not my own good work. And so this is what we tell to our cops. Why is biased policing bad for the police? We lose public support, public legitimacy, and it's unsafe. And it can be ineffective. And that's what we hammer home to our cops. You know, how do we make it real for them? Why would it be okay for one officer to tell another officer, hey, I think your actions are biased? This is part of what we allow, the vehicle we give them, because it can get you killed, just like that guy could have killed me. So did I know I was prejudging that guy, the slow, nice brother? No. I didn't. So, who do we prejudge? Everybody. We talked about a we and a they group. It's more possible to prejudge a they group, an out group, someone that's not in your in group. It's more easy to do that. And there's a word up there, ambiguous stimuli, that I need you to remember from now until the next time you pass judgment on a police officer. Ambiguous means it's vague, it's not clear, it's not immediately apparent. Right? If a skunk walked into this room, we all know what to do, right? We run for an exit and we sacrifice one of our folks to go get it. And take Ed, Tracy, don't leave Ed here with the skunk. But if a skunk comes in here, we know exactly what to do. Because a skunk is always a skunk, right? They smell bad. They'll spray you if they get mad or scared. I don't know what else they do, because that's really all that matters to me. I don't want them around. So it's easy. They're not part of our we group. We don't like those skunks, because they're always skunks. But it's a constant. It's like a math equation. The problem with people is people are more ambiguous. So if it's unclear, if it's ambiguous, oh my, I'm going to run out of paper. An ambiguous stimuli is something that's not immediately clear. Let's say a guy walks in with a ball cap that has a Confederate flag on it. And he says, is this bias training? What's that mean? Whose side is he on? What does he believe? Is he a good person? Is he a threat? We don't know. But some of you made value judgments in your head, or started to walk down a road. Immediately, because that's how our brains work. We apply what we see to our history, to what we know from studies, right, and what else is going on. And that's where bias jumps in and tries to hijack the car. Well, if he's got a Confederate flag hat on, he must be a biased, racist, no good neo-Nazi, probably has a gun, he's going to shoot up the place. Could be. Yeah. Right. You know, if a black guy walks in and says, I'm a school teacher. Someone very close to me was raped by a black school teacher. Should I look at him as, well, it's just one of those guys? Hold on a second, Joe. And so that's the temptation. If we don't get a hold of our bias, it'll try to hijack the car, right? And where does it want to steer? Off the road, into the ditch, and cause a bigger problem. We can't, as police officers and as people interested in making our community better, we have to be cautious that we're not letting bias hijack the car, because it's so tempting and it's so easy. And there is history. That person who was raped by that black school teacher, I've seen the after effects. It's very personal to me. The damage has been lifelong. But I will say that if you ask the African Americans that I've dealt with, if they see me treating them like that guy, I know that guy's name. He has a name and a face, not a race. Does that make sense? He's got a specific name and a specific face. He is not representative of the entire race. So when a police officer encounters an ambiguous stimuli, like some guy walking in with a Confederate flag hat, says, is this the bias training? We're going to look at how his tone of voice was, how he said it, and our brain is going to start steering towards experiential evidence, empirical evidence, and if it fits with what we believe. And this is why I say everybody in this room has a bias, because you made a judgment about that example. And that's okay. It's not okay for us to get up and hit the guy as soon as he walks in, right? Like, hey, Justin, pat that guy down, right? That would be biased policing. This is what I challenge our cops with. What group stereotypes, what characteristics do we apply to somebody if it's ambiguous, if we don't know what this means? And stimuli means something that gets one of your five senses' attention, right? Smell it, see it, hear it, touch it. Your sixth sense, right? The hair stands up on the back of your neck and you can't quite tell why. You guys ever met a person like that? You don't know why. Your bias, your implicit bias, your unconscious bias that you have, that you hold on to, is going to jump into your brain's thought process. So Here's what I challenge our cops with. This is give or take. Tell me about this woman. You can just shout out your answers. Or
she's getting paid for that shot.
She's getting paid for that shot? Well, now what does that mean? What? Tell me more about that statement. She said she's getting paid for that shot.
It was very posed and very sort of fantasy-fulfilling-esque, Elena. She's looking kind of come hither. Yes.
Somebody said a come hither look. Okay. Tough. Motorcycle calendar. What else? What if I told you, here's your binary choice, and I don't like binary choices either, but here's your binary choice, and I'll tell you at the end of class. This is either the first page of a pornographic publication photo layout where this woman in the following pages had her clothes off, or this woman has devoted herself to preaching the gospel to outlaw motorcyclists. So she goes around to these biker rallies and tries to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to them. Now, if I show up at a biker rally and say, hey, I want to talk to y'all about Jesus, I'm probably going to get beat up. Right? So would she be a more efficient vehicle for getting some outlaw biker to at least pause and say, huh? I mean, I know. Maybe they like Brad Pitt. But, so now what do you guys think? Is this one of the Sisters of Christ, I can't remember, the Evangelical Motorcycle Group? Or is this page one of what gets worse from there in a pornographic publication? What's that? No, I'm not showing the second page. What's that?
The photographer is setting up that shot on purpose to make it look like A when it's really B.
So tell me more about that. She said the photographer set it up to make it look like it's A instead of really B.
Yeah, I mean, she's making it, whoever the photographer is, setting up that shot and posing her in that way specifically, so the viewer, the reader, is brought in on sort of their sexual wavelength, basically. And then the story is going to be about something unexpected, which is the evangelical thing. I mean, I think it's still very focused.
Yeah, so she's saying that the photographer set it up a certain way to bring people's attention to it, and then it's going to be something different. Sorry, go ahead, Tracy.
Well, I was going to say, it could be neither story, but I think it proves the point of how we make decisions about how we look. I mean, you were talking about TV. Mm-hmm. I would say we are constantly surrounded by all kinds of images about whoever you want to call the master manipulator out there, or getting us to believe certain things about how people look.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's one way that I limit what I consume, but everything around us is fulfilled with these kinds of sort of imagery.
Ooh, that's a good word. Can I borrow that word?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'd like to think of a positive story for that. But
right.
I think it tries to elicit all of those kinds of things.
Right. So she said that we're surrounded by these images. And this image is trying to bring in.
I mean, it evokes those images that we see a lot about sexuality, maybe judgments about women.
Right.
Disrupting maybe the ideology that we have about women and motorcycles. She's got on high heels. There's a lot of sexuality in this picture. And so, you know, my view is it could be any kind of story, not waiting on the two that.
Right, and I gave you a binary choice on purpose.
Right, right.
Right?
That's how binary is so dangerous.
Amen to that. Sir, did you have something to say?
Oh, yeah, I said I still don't have enough data between A and B because both conflict with each other. One that if she's going to call a binary, she's probably not going to be on the
jacket. Well, but see, now that's a good analysis. Right? It's a Japanese motorcycle.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with cops. What she just said was, not very many people are going to have this long to look at this picture. They're going to make a split-second decision. And your brain makes split-second decisions every day, right? You come up to a stop sign, you roll down to 5 miles an hour, you glance left and right and decide it's safe, and you roll through. I know nobody in this room does that. But I'm just saying I've seen it happen, right? But your brain made a split-second decision. And Tracy is 100% right. When you look at this photo for 3 seconds, like if I put it up here and then immediately took it away, your decision on is this the sister's evangelical motorcycle group or is this a pornographic publication, you're going to have to decide. He analyzed it further and said it's a Japanese motorcycle, which could lend more information. So what I gave you was an ambiguous stimuli. I gave you something that doesn't tell the whole story. Would you believe me if I said that police officers every day, with good intention, go somewhere or do something, some police act, and we encounter ambiguous stimuli? And then what do? We have to make a decision. And if we have bias and we haven't taken steps to address our implicit bias or we're not even aware of it, well, then we're steering the car off the road into the ditch and causing a bigger problem. And I'm a police officer talking about police officers. As community, are we doing that? You know, and so that's my invitation. Yes, sir. Well, so what he said was, having worked with traumatic brain injury folks, maybe the next part of this is an advertisement encouraging helmet use, and a 20-year cop might come to that conclusion rather than a 1-year cop. And that's the fine art of policing. Let me tell you about it. I used to recruit police officers, and I've been responsible for field training for more than 20 years. When I say responsible, I've been a field training officer. For a short period of time, I ran our training unit at the Columbia Police Department. They're people like you. They get scared. They get mad. They get frustrated. We give them this tool belt, right? It has a pistol and handcuffs and extra bullets and pepper spray and a taser. Oh, and a stick. If you read Cro-Magnon, if you watch the Discovery Channel, which I do love, I will watch the Discovery Channel, Tracy, I'll be honest with you. And they go back and they start showing like those caveman things, you know, like. And then one day they learn to make fire. And from that point forward, you know, I love those things. They would hit each other with sticks. So in 2016, if we hire you, we're going to say, now, watch your bias, be educated. We're going to train you in good tactics. And here's how to make a criminal case. Here's the law code for being part of our civilization. And here's a stick to go hit somebody if you feel scared. That doesn't seem much like evolution. I'm not touting or denying evolution. I'm just saying, I don't know about that, right? Well, I'll tell you the answer to this at the end of the class. But that's a great discussion. And this is the meat and potatoes of this class. How did we come to that decision? No matter what you decided about this lady, look inside yourself. What drew you to the conclusion that you came up with? And if I were a police officer and I walked out of this building and a guy started walking up to me and his car was barely running and I didn't know him and he didn't fit my we group, could I, with no ill intent, jump to a biased decision or a perception? I think we kind of answered this. Do you know when you're doing this, right? Like, do you know when you're doing this? Here's an example I always give our cops. So, as a police officer, I stop a guy for speeding. And I walk up to the window, and we're really busy. And it's kind of a minor violation. And the state law says, if the speed limit is 40, you can go no faster than 40. Everybody agree with that? That's one of the rules of our civilization. This guy was going 60. So I walk up to the window. We're really busy. I say, I'm Mike Hester. I'm with the police. you were stopped because you were doing 20 miles over the speed limit. Is everything okay in the car? Because like if somebody's if their wife's in the back having a baby, I need to send them on to the hospital, right? Guy looks at me and says, no hablo. Well, I don't speak Spanish. We had no Spanish-speaking officers on duty. We were busy. So I just said, slow down. You're free to go. The universal, I guess, because he didn't have to ask twice, even though he didn't speak English. Now, that seems like a reasonable thing to do, but what if that kid been from Hallsville? And I walk up the window and say, I'm Mike Hester. I'm stopping you tonight because you're doing 20 miles over the posted speed limit. Is everything okay in the car? If the kid would have said, yeah, I'm sorry, officer. That's my country accent. Yeah, I'm sorry, officer, I knew. I'd give that guy a ticket and feel good. Is that racially targeting or racially enforcing a law? 20 miles is 20 miles. That's a scientific fact. It's caught on video. There's evidence to prove both the drivers were speeding. And that's what's difficult about being a cop. I'm not sure I made the right decision in retrospect, to be honest with you. But I didn't recognize in my own self that I held the white rural guy to a higher standard than I did this young man. I don't know where he's from. He said he didn't speak English. I didn't know how to ask him. Didn't matter. 20 miles is 20 miles. There's been lots of studies, scientific studies, that show that it's different how people are treated on this. And if you don't believe me, put on your best outfit and go to a bank and say, I would like to open a bank account. Or go to a car dealership. This is even better. Any car dealers in the room? All right, let's talk about them. No. Go to a car dealership, right? Put on your best outfit. Go to a car dealership and walk around the showroom floor and look at the most expensive car they got. Be like, and don't ask for any help. Eventually, if you're looking at the most expensive car and you're dressed nice, what are they going to do? Ooh, easy cheese. I'm going to go. They're going to come, can I help you? Oh, yeah. Do you have this model in the luxury model? Oh, no, that is our luxury model. Oh, I was hoping for more stuff. And look how they treat you. Man, you want a cup of coffee? Come sit down. Now, then, a couple weeks later, go back in your worst outfit and walk around the fanciest car in the showroom. And if somebody comes and talks to you, say, do you have any fancier options than this one? And I'm going to bet a dollar, because I don't have that many dollars, but I'm going to bet a dollar the guy says, no. And walks away. Anybody think that's way off base? Why is that? Perceived socioeconomic status. What does that have to do with policing? We're human beings. Fallible just like y'all. So, some police officers have made mistakes in talking to the nice guy in the BMW with the suit on, and then there's some guy who was involved in the same wreck saying, well, that BMW ran the stop sign and T-boned my car, and the rich white guy is going to say, I proceeded safely with caution through the intersection after coming to a stop. And then some cop's going to have to make a decision. And if some cop hasn't got a hold of their implicit bias, they're going to wreck in the ditch again. English language abilities. I already addressed that one. Gender, age, religious affiliation. Some people, if you tell them I'm a Muslim or I'm a Catholic or I'm a Christian or I'm a non-believer or I'm an agnostic, they'll treat you differently. If you don't believe me, go do that some one time. And here's my opinion on that. This is personal opinion. We ought not to do that. We should maybe be a little bit more respectful of everybody's view, not just our own. But it's very tempting, you know. It's very tempting. Profession. When I go to a restaurant and I sit down and somebody says, aren't you a police officer? I say, yeah, I am. Oh, I got to go. I forgot about an appointment. Because I'm used to people at restaurants. You've never lived as a police officer until you say, yes, I'm a police officer. And you order your food, and then they bring out your food, and then you see everybody in the kitchen peeking out before you take your first bite. True story. They don't know me. I mean, some cop may have treated them badly, experientially. They may have an axe to grind. Thank you. Sir, can you move to the front? And no. Sexual orientation. You know, if I say I'm a Christian, then people automatically assume this, this, and this about me. Doesn't really matter, but I've had two different sets of roommates who are lesbians. But if I tell you I'm a Christian, you thought, oh, well, he must. And then if I tell you I had two roommates that were lesbians, oh, well, maybe he's cool. I mean, I don't know what's cool. What's cool is treating each other as human beings. Anybody ever seen that in action? No, no, no. All right. All right. Let's be back at 10. Let's be back at 1:15. Let's take lunch. I'm sorry, I went on a little bit. Let's go back at 1:15. Lunch is on your own. Sorry about that. I tried to get it catered, but you know, come back at 1:15. I really appreciate your guys' enthusiasm and patience with me. I'm trying to unpack what I see as our solution to what we've been doing wrong, and how we can involve you guys. And I hope it's been useful. Come back at 1:15. Lunch on your. There's a lot of cops around, so I mean, I think you can leave things. But yeah, come back 1:15. If you're not going to come back, please write a comment back there like, he doesn't really look like Brad Pitt or something. False advertising. Huh?
Can I buy you lunch? Can I buy you lunch?
Huh?